Since the start of the pandemic, scientists have identified thousands of genetic mutations in the virus that causes COVID-19. We're talking about what mutation means for community spread and contagiousness. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. UW researchers are cataloging and sequencing genomes to understand what COVID looks like from one community to the next. What do you want to know about how it has spread in Wisconsin? Are you heeding the governor's plea to stay home and not venture out? What is the best tactic to limit the spread? We're at 800-642-1234. Dave O'Connor is a UW Medical Foundation professor of pathology and laboratory medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dave, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks, Kate.
So when a virus enters our body, it finds a cell to inject its genetic material into. It finds that host cell, and the virus has to adapt and stay stealthy and a step ahead of our immune system. What are you discovering in how the virus mutates with samples you're looking at?
Well, when people hear the word mutate, they usually think of something that's really bad and dangerous. But in the case of the coronavirus, the virus is typically really, really stable. It has about 30,000 letters in its genome, and we can read those like a book. And every time the virus infects someone new, it's like someone has to type those letters out onto a page. And, you know, they might occasionally make a mistake. They might type a Y when they mean to type a T. And that creates a change that often doesn't change the behavior of the virus in any way, but allows us to compare those different sequences of letters to understand how the virus is spreading.
You know, some new terminology we armchair epidemiologists have been learning is about drift, about neutral drift, these random genetic changes that don't exactly help or hurt the virus. What kind of drift are you seeing around Wisconsin with the samples you're looking at?
Yeah, so early on in the epidemic, what we saw when we compared viruses from Dane County and Milwaukee County is two really important things. The first is that the viruses that were in Dane County sort of stayed in Dane County, and the same thing for the viruses in Milwaukee. So we didn't see viruses with these genetic signatures of Dane County in Milwaukee or vice versa. The other thing that we can do, since we can count how many of these changes occur over time, is we can use that to estimate how much transmission has been going on, because the more transmission, the more drift, the more of these sorts of changes you're going to see. And what we found was that after Governor Evers' Safer at Home order went into effect on March 25th, the amount of drift slowed down substantially in both Dane and Milwaukee counties, which provides another indication that that sort of stay-at-home order really did have an effect on transmission.
Do you know how that has changed since the stay-at-home order was struck down in May, or how our movements have affected what you're seeing with the virus?
Sure. So we've continued sequencing viruses from these communities since then, and now we see that more there's more mixing of the viral signatures. We see signatures that were once only seen in Madison, in Milwaukee, and vice versa, and then we're starting to see new signatures showing up in Madison and Milwaukee, which probably are coming from other parts of the state that haven't had very much sequencing done, but they look sort of just different and foreign to us, so that they're coming from somewhere else. And, you know, all the signs point to what you can see if you look out the window, which is that, you know, the virus is spreading without, you know, much of a firebreak. And people are a lot more mobile now than they were at the very start of the epidemic.
Dave O'Connor, professor of pathology and laboratory medicine with us, UW School of Medicine, Public Health. We're discussing the mutation of the virus that causes COVID-19 and steps to help prevent the spread. You can join in with your questions, what you're seeing in your community. What do you want to know about how COVID has spread in Wisconsin over the last 8 months? Join in at 800-642-1234. Dave, the body's immune system can learn from previous viral encounters and become immune to reinfection. Could the mutation that you're seeing weaken the power of antibodies?
So it's a good question. In fact, one of my buddies from grade school emailed me yesterday and said that he had heard from his doctor that this could be a possibility. And I want to reassure people that there's no evidence that that's happening. The virus makes these small little typos in its genome, if you will, and most of them are, just signatures that we can read out to track the virus. There has not been substantial evidence for changes in the virus that would change its susceptibility to antibodies or would counteract the effectiveness of vaccines. That isn't to say that in 5 or 10 years those sorts of changes might occur and become a problem, but there is no evidence that that's happening yet.
So you're doing all this cataloging and sequencing of the genomes to understand really essentially the source of outbreaks. Is that where this, these libraries can help?
Yeah, so it's sort of like viral detective work, where you're kind of trying to figure out where the virus has been, and then you can compare the viruses to make some projections about where it's going.
Where is it going?
Well, right now it seems to be going everywhere because just not a whole lot that's going to stand in the way of its spread. We seem to be seeing just unfettered spread. And as we sequence more and more viruses, the fact that we keep picking up new and different viruses in our communities that we haven't necessarily seen before means that these viruses are coming in from other places, and that means that people are traveling and seeing other people and getting infected with viruses from other places, or other people are coming here infecting people. And this is happening certainly, statewide and countrywide right now, and it doesn't bode well for the next couple of months.
As you are well aware, there are studies flying every which direction, everywhere. And there was one out of UT Austin in recent weeks that found the virus that causes the disease's accumulating genetic mutation, and one of which may make it more contagious. Can you speak to that? Are we looking at something more contagious here?
Well, there has been one change in the virus that seems to have come from viruses that were originally found in Asia that differs from viruses that were circulating early on in Europe. And viruses that have that European variant have largely displaced the viruses that have the Asian variant. And there is some indication that that Asian variant might be slightly more transmissible, but I think the verdict on how much of an effect that has, is still out. So, you might have variants that have subtle effects on transmission, but again, it's important to emphasize that, there's no solid evidence that those viruses are more severe or more likely to cause severe disease than other viruses. Right now, we think there's mainly just, genetic signatures that we can use to track the viruses. They don't tell you too much about the biology.
Okay. UW Pathology and Laboratory Medicine Professor Dave O'Connor is breaking down how the virus that causes COVID is changing what we should know about community spread and testing. Have you been able to find local testing when you need it? Did you get speedy results? Did you talk with a contact tracer? Are you worried about letting your guard down at a time when the virus is surging and hospitals are maxed out? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Dave O'Connor here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're discussing how the virus that causes COVID-19 is mutating and what testing can do to curb transmission, staying at home. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. UW researchers are amassing viral samples to build genome sequencing libraries to better understand the behavior of the virus, how it spreads through communities, where the outbreaks come from. Have you had a rapid test? What do you want to know about this screening? Are you concerned about being asymptomatic in your household? Be part of this 800-642-1234. We have UW School of Medicine and Public Health Pathology Professor Dave O'Connor for 10 more minutes. Let's bring in Kim now in Madison. Hi, Kim.
Hi. So my question is, I have a couple questions. One, are these specimens like age labeled? Are we seeing more mutations in the older age population? And should we be worried about that? And I haven't seen the actual genetic code for the virus, but what are the chances of one of these mutations becoming like a stock code earlier on in the actual strand?
Sure. So So in terms of age, we don't see any difference in terms of someone's age and their propensity for having viruses that change. The virus seems to behave the same in terms of its biology in people of different ages, though obviously as people age, their immune systems don't work as well, and they have a harder time fighting off the virus. So you see more severe disease in people who are older, but it doesn't seem to have much of an effect on how the virus's sequence changes. And the second question was, how does the virus, what's the likelihood that what's the likelihood that we see a change that makes, for a super strain or something that's really a lot more severe? And that's really unlikely. You know, there's other viruses like HIV and influenza whose viruses, whose genomes evolve a lot faster than this coronavirus. And even there, where you have so much more genetic variation occurring, you don't really see the emergence of super strains. Hmm. So I wouldn't worry too much about that.
Kim, thanks so much for those questions. Jill in Madison is here. Jill, hi.
Good morning. I had a comment. Working in healthcare, like, we do our best to keep everything clean, wipe down doorknobs, lobby chairs, blah, blah, blah. Well, as far as staff, I've had a handful of staff, even like my old manager, who has had a COVID positive family member in the home, like their spouse or children, and they're told to come back to work the next day without a COVID test, as long as they're asymptomatic. And that just scares everybody around, knowing that these organizations are okay because it's a safety concern to patients when we're low staff. So that kind of contradicts everything that we're trying to do.
Jill, thank you for bringing that situation. Dave O'Connor, what do you see there in terms of staffing and being asymptomatic?
Well, I think it's a symptom of a larger problem, which is that the response is completely chaotic and undermanaged. And that sort of thing, frankly, shouldn't be happening. But because you have every organization being left largely on its own to formulate its own policies on how to handle things, and you haven't had strong leadership from the government imposing evidence-based policies about what should and should not be allowed, you have local decision makers who within an organization make decisions like that that are not grounded in good science. And it's a shame that it's happened. And, you know, my hope is that under a Biden administration, you're going to see a resurgence of, policies that are grounded in science. And you're going to see more guardrails put in so that things like that can't happen and shouldn't happen.
We're talking with Dave O'Connor, professor of pathology and laboratory medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He's studying how the coronavirus mutates, what that means for fighting the spread in our communities, and taking your questions as well as 800-642-1234. Dave, on the topic there of policy, what can state public policy do right now as this virus is spreading almost unchecked in Wisconsin? What policy do you think would help stop what is occurring?
Well, we've been thinking about this a lot, especially when it comes to trying to get kids back into schools. And so my colleague Tom Friedrich, Shelby O'Connor, and I have been working on developing, testing regimens that schools could use themselves to try to add an additional layer of security to make it possible for kids to get back into school. And we've encountered some of the challenges that have plagued all the testing programs when we've been doing this. And one of them is that it's similar to what the last caller said, people get tested, then they know that they're positive, and then they're told that they have to stay home for 2 weeks. In a lot of places, that's not possible because of, economic insecurity. I think what we need to do both at the state and federal level is realize that the cost of having the virus spread is enormous, and we need to try to incentivize people to stay home. And, we're increasingly thinking that something like a quarantine universal basic income should be considered, so that if people have a confirmed test, either of themselves or of someone who's in their house, that they would get compensated to stay home during the 2 weeks after that, so that people don't have to choose between doing the right thing and quarantining and being able to eat or being able to, maintain their livelihoods.
Yeah, and so what you're seeing there with that policy of a universal basic income for quarantine, meaning that they could still have income while they are quarantining for those 14 days and being off of work, especially if they don't have benefits where they could use vacation or sick time.
Right. And if you were to, pay someone $15 an hour for 40 hours a week for a 2 week quarantine, that's $1,200 per quarantine. You could imagine paying, someone up to, say, $5,000 per year for four of those events. And it would be expensive, undoubtedly, but you're not comparing the cost of providing such a universal basic income to zero. You're comparing it to the economic loss that's otherwise occurring because the virus is spreading unchecked and kids can't be in school and businesses can't get back to normal. And so I think that we need to think really hard about how we can incentivize people to follow the rule, the rules and policies that have been established. We know that these things work. In early August, Melbourne, Australia, where I lived for a year, and Wisconsin had about the same number of cases, and they have managed to drive their cases down to zero each day, while we now have 7,000 each day. So the policies that work in keeping people at home, keeping people at a distance, wearing masks, these things work in large, complex populations. There just has to be a will, and the government has to be providing the support to make it so that people want to and are able to follow those policies.
I want to look at testing here for a moment. UW-Madison is offering free rapid antigen testing to the community starting today. What are the pluses and minuses of rapid tests?
Well, I think this is still very early on. The biggest plus is that you get an answer really, really fast. So we now know that the virus goes from being barely detectable to being highly contagious within a day or two. And you have a really short window where people are going to be really contagious. And so if you go to a community testing center and you don't get your results back for 4 or 5 days and you act normally during those 4 or 5 days, you're not doing anything to slow down transmission because you don't know whether you're contagious during that period. Conversely, with the antigen test, which gives you an answer in 15 minutes, if you're positive, then you would leave the site knowing that you're positive and knowing that you can take these actions to protect yourself, your family, and others. So that's the biggest plus. The biggest downside of these antigen tests is that they're relatively insensitive compared to conventional PCR tests. And generally, I think that's okay because these less sensitive tests should still pick up the vast majority of people who are highly contagious, but we're still learning about the performance of the assays that are going to be used at the UW testing We don't know yet whether these tests are going to perform exactly the same way in people who are symptomatic, where they seem to work pretty well, and people who are non-symptomatic, who are very early in infection. So getting that data is going to be really, really important.
And these will be spit tests?
No, they're going to be nasal. They're going to be nasal swab tests, but not the ones that scrape your brain, just ones that go into your nose, about an inch.
Dave, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Dave O'Connor is a professor of pathology and laboratory medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Coming up on the cusp of a likely recount in Wisconsin, we take a look at why recounts happen, who asks for them, what outcomes they lead to. It's recounts after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.